Is it a real style? Is it not? Is it a gimmick? And I was like, I don't care. I just want to brew it. It flew out of here. People are like, what is that? Oh my God, it's so good.
Hello and welcome back to the Craft Brewers Creative Podcast, a beer can lover production. I'm your host, Jenna Steele, and I am super hype about this week's episode. And before we get into that, as a quick reminder about what this is, who we are, what's going on here, this is the Craft Beer Podcast for everything creative and visual, but not necessarily drinkable in the craft beer industry, because you know what? We can get brewers talking about their beer all day long, but to get them talking about what they also want to put on the can and how they want to present their beer is another story. And that's the story we're looking to get into on the Craft Brewers Creative Podcast. So to follow along with everything that we're going to be talking about, make sure to follow Beer Can Lover on Instagram, because I'll always post like pictures and stuff about the cans and what we are talking about. And honestly, this past week I've been drinking like all Eventide stuff. So if you want to see what we're talking about, head over there, check it out, see what I've been drinking and see what we talk about. So, you know, let's just get right into it. So today I have my conversation with Haley Cowan and Adam Lukey, I think, yes, from Eventide Brewing in Atlanta, Georgia. They are Grant Park's craft brewery. And something that I really love about them is their logo, or not their logo, their like catchphrase. What's it called? Slogan? Logo? No. Obviously not logo. Slogan. Catchphrase. Yeah, they're that thing. It's great, not complicated, because great beer doesn't have to be complicated. And I love that. And honestly, that we talk about it more, and you'll hear, but really, I love how Haley and their team has been able to really stick with why they started the brewery, what their vision was, what their goals were, and they really stuck by that. And Great Not Complicated is really this theme and this thread that really does carry through from when they started the brewery until now and all their beers. So I'm excited about this one. So let's get into it. And here is my conversation with Haley and Adam from Eventide. Thank you guys again for being here. So just quick introductions, name, position, kind of what you do here, and yeah.
So my name is Haley Cowan. I am one of the original founders of Eventide, and my best title at this time would be Jack of all trades, master of none. I do a little bit of everything wherever I'm needed, and primarily my role is in marketing.
Awesome.
And my name's Adam Lukey. I'm the head brewer here, so I take care of things in the back, recipe development, brewing itself, taking care of the beer, ensuring quality, and just making good beer, you know?
Here. Absolutely, yeah. So as one of like the founders and, you know, really starting out with the brewery, what was it like starting out initially? What was kind of your idea of what you were thinking and stuff like that?
It's a lot harder than what you might think, or certainly what we thought at the time. There were four of us that originally founded the company, and based on our backgrounds at the time, we had an engineer, myself in sales, a guy in marketing, and a guy in logistics. And we thought, well, we've got the four cornerstones that we need to build a successful business, and we make good beer. And so we set out at making good beer. And then when it came around time to applying for all the license, we realized we need names. And so among us, we did a lot of kind of crowdsourcing for how we wanted the brand to feel. And we really worked backwards from who we were as individuals, who we were as friends. And so we wanted it to tell a story, to be able to kind of incorporate into the fabric of our friendships, as well as the fabric of who we were. And we landed on Eventide because at the time, all of us had day jobs, and we were meeting in the evenings to build the idea of Eventide. And Eventide literally means twilight in Old English. So that was the time of day that we were gathering together to have a beer, to pursue this and build a brand.
That's so interesting. I didn't know that. I love that. Cool. When you originally started out, like, were you yourself a big beer drinker?
Initially, when we started out as home brewers, beer was something that was very new to me. I'd had a lot of your kind of mainstream American pilsners and lagers, as it would be, things that you, as my husband would say, you cut your teeth on in college or field parties in high school. But it really took being a part of the recipe development and the brewing process to appreciate that it's very akin to any complex recipe that you would make in the kitchen. You can make pancakes out of the box, and you probably would appreciate it less than if you measured out all of the ingredients and knew exactly what went into it. And for me, knowing what went into the beer, including the time that it took people that I cared about to make it, gave me a different perspective on it, and that really kind of changed the way that I thought about it, but it also changed what I drank. And so over the past, I'd say 12 years, it's been quite a journey from some of the sweeter, sappier beers to what I drink now, which is pretty much anything you put in front of me, though I have my favorites.
Yeah, absolutely. I'm assuming as the head brewer, you're a beer person before you became the head brewer.
Yeah. So. Yeah. So yeah, my beer journey actually started, I went to Germany in 2001. And, you know, I had had the high school parties with Natty Light and stuff like that. And I went to Germany, and what I found was just very interesting to me was, instead of having like a Budweiser where everyone drank it all over the country, like every little town in Germany has its own brewery. Like they would have a bakery, or they would have a butcher, they would have a brewery. So, you know, I traveled around Germany having beer recipes that were brewed from, you know, the year 1040. And, you know, just beers that have been brewed that way for decades and centuries. And it really opened my mind to that. And I started seeking out new beer experiences.
Wow. I didn't realize Germany was still really had that culture going. That's awesome. So something I like to ask everyone is, do you remember the first beer you ever had? And then the first craft beer you ever had?
Ooh, that's a tough one. I mean, I think back to the first alcohol I ever remember having was like box wine. But as far as beer, I think it was like, you know, a sip of dad's, you know, Keystone or Miller High Life. I don't even know what it was. Oh, and just hating it.
Absolutely.
Just being like, this is disgusting. Mm-hmm. And then as far as craft beer is concerned, the one I drank the most of was actually Lagunitas IPA. That really brought me into it. But Stone in college was one that, you know, Arrogant Bastard Ale really was like, whoa, this is, you know, something heavy. And, you know, you're drinking Natty Light. It's like, what, 4.9%, 4.8%. And you drink an Arrogant Bastard, and it's like way up there. It's like twice as much alcohol.
So like you've had a cocktail.
Yeah, exactly. So so something like that. That was probably first foray into craft beer.
Oh, my first beer was definitely on the fishing dock with my dad, and it was definitely Old Milwaukee. And I remember my dad very clearly saying to me, you're not going to like it, but you can try it if you want to. And I did, and I probably was 4 or 5 at the time. And I venture to say it was probably almost 20 years before I tried my next beer, just because that I was so scarred. And that says nothing to the beer. I think it is very appropriate to style. It just, you know, to a 4-year-old, beer is not tasty, which is, you know, it's probably a good thing for all the parents out there. And then my first craft beer, I'm pretty confident, would be Wild Blue. And this was around the time that Total Wine came on the scene with letting you make your mix 6-pack. And I had a friend who said, we're going to get you into beer. And I said, challenge accepted. Let's do it. And we went and made a mix 6-pack. And that happened to be one of the ones that was in there. And I feel pretty confident that that was my first craft beer.
Who does that?
No idea.
Okay.
I do know that it has a blueberry bulldog on the front.
Okay.
I think it's called Wild Blue. Do we need a quick fact check? Do we need to Google that?
Oh, I don't have Wi-Fi in here. Yeah, let's get it up.
All right.
Some others in that six pack were Red Seal and some other red ales, which kind of has led to a style that I am pretty partial to. I mm-hmm. like the red ales.
Yeah. What's it called? The red something?
Flanders?
Yeah.
Yeah, Flanders is a European, northwestern European red sour ale.
Okay, because I remember the first time I tried one of those, I was like, oh, I like this.
Yeah, yeah, it is a really good a good tasting beer. They do take a while mm-hmm. to make, though.
Okay, what is it? Wild Blue. Oh my god, that is a blue dog.
Yes, it is a blueberry lager.
Ooh, 8% too.
I don't remember that, but at 8%, that would go a little ways to explain why.
I was talking to someone the other day, and they said that their mom for like high school party they were going to was like, here, like, so you can show up with something, like trying to be cool mom or whatever, brought them a six pack, not knowing anything about beer or anything, gave them a six pack of Flying Monkey. It's like 10% or something. It was like their first alcoholic thing, and it's like, it's beer, and his mom gave it to him. It's like, oh, you'll be fine, just take this, whatever. Drunk. Like, I'm like, yeah, I think that's the first time I had that same thing too. Wait, that's what it's called, right? Am I?
There's a Flying Monkey, yeah. There's
right?
a Flying Monkey, a Flying Dog.
No. Golden Monkey.
Okay.
Golden Monkey.
Yeah.
Okay.
You know what I'm talking about, 10%, right?
Probably 10% makes sense now.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
A Belgian Golden Strong Ale or something like that. Yeah,
And I think the first time I had that too, I had the same experience of like, I bought it not reading, and next thing I know, I'm drunk. And it's just so funny when that happens. anyways.
Well, I moved from Wild Blue as a sweeter beer offering into some of the Belgian quads. And so I moved from sweet to a little more sweet, but also up in the alcohol content. So
yeah,
for me, those are kind of a one and done.
It's funny. My friends and I often, like in college and stuff, we would go to a craft brewery and we would order based off the highest ABV. Mm-hmm. Because
gotta get your money's worth.
Well, they're more expensive often, but it was like, my stomach is only so big. If we have a goal of going out tonight, I can't
drink 14 beers at 3%.
I can't do it. It doesn't work. Yeah. But then if I accidentally do, and then I'm like, whoa, I didn't realize that this was possible. anyways, so, okay, so kind of back to Eventide, your process and everything. What is it like? Like, how do you even start to think about what you're going to brew or what you're going to release? And I know you said this one that I'm trying right now, I mean, it had to be brewed way back in May, and things can take a while, obviously. And so how far ahead of time do you have to start planning typically? And like, what does that process even look like? Like, are you deciding what kind of beer you want to make first? Or do you just, as a salesperson, do you come and say like, oh, I have this incredible name, brew something to match it? Like, how does that work?
So it really depends upon whether it is something that is going to market. Because if it's going to market, we would classify it as a year-round or seasonal. And so that has some impact on where it goes into our production. And then the next criteria would be, is it going to be poured out of the tasting room? And if it's going to be poured only in the tasting room, is it going to be draft or package? So there's several answers that, or several questions that have to be answered before you consider any of the other items. Mm. And then once those answers are provided, then you move into more of Adam's realm with looking at the different styles that he's interested in developing, and he can speak more to the production schedule and how that goes about.
Yeah, so like Haley mentioned, I mean, we do have our seasonal beers. Like Redheaded Haley is a very late summer or early fall beer. It's our amber ale that comes out, named after Haley. and also
my favorite.
Yeah. and like Fest beer, we released it last week because it's Fest season, right? Oktoberfest is, you know, mid-September to early October.
And I'm sorry, what is the criteria of like an Oktoberfest beer?
So that's a very good question, and it's kind of muddy. Some people, you know, that's a hill that they will die on. And for me, you know, I think different beers can be an Oktoberfest beer, but a Märzen, I mean, the word März means March in German, so it's typically brewed in March, but since, you know, I talked about lagering, but since we have, you know, temperature control in the modern age and stainless steel, we can accelerate that process a little bit. So there's an Oktoberfest, which could be several beers. There's a Märzen, which is typically brewed in March for the Fest season. And then there's a Fest beer, which has its own criteria. So for us, we call our Märzen a Fest beer. And like I said, some people may be like, well, that's not 100% true. But, you know, for us, we're just having fun with it. So, you know, I'm not getting caught up in that. But so, you know, our seasonal releases, late fall to early winter, we have Kattegat and Highlander. So those are just kind of baked into the year. So we know, okay, we'll throw it in here, we'll throw it in there. As long as we're in that area, we're fine. But then, you know, if we have deadlines to meet, then we have to really look at it and, you know, look at the scheduling. And that's what our production manager, Kelsey, does, is she looks at what we need in the market, what we need in the tap room, and say, okay, we need to brew this first before that. And
to Adam's kind of point in the schedule, when Kelsey's looking at it, things that go to market have much longer lead times because there's labeling, there's promotion, or label development, rather, name development, promotion, and then a coordinated release between our distributor as well as us here in the tasting room. So it's a much larger coordinated effort to put a beer in the market opposed to when we release it in the tasting room. So yeah, those items have a lot longer lead time.
And so, and you had just mentioned the label designing and having to get that ready. At what point, or whose idea is it for what a label is going to look like, or who does it?
So
how does that happen?
Yeah, so we typically will brew the beer first, because, you know, in my mind, that's the most important part. Is like, it could have a cool name, it could have a cool design, but if the beer is terrible, then I unfortunately don't think anyone's going to drink it after the first try. So it's the beer, then usually the name, then the design. So we get the design from the name, which we like to keep it kind of in tune with the beer itself. You know, if it's a fruited light beer, we're not going to, you know, go with something like a dark and heavy name, you know, like Dark and Stormy for a fruited Kolsch. Yeah.
And it's kind of similar to like when we were developing the name Eventide, though Adam was not a part of our team 12 years ago. It was really about the feeling and the idea. And so I think that goes into naming beers now, is how does this feel in comparison to how the beer tastes, how it looks. So there's a lot that has to do with just kind of the story that particular beer tells.
Yeah, and we have a graphic designer, Katie Burke of katieburkestudio.com. So she does multimedia.
Shout out to Katie.
Katie, hi. So we like come up with the name, and then we typically have kind of some directions that we're leaning towards for certain designs. Like, I mean, I think the one that she knocked out of the park, which was she sent us first revision, and we said, yeah, just change this little thing and it's perfect, was Cosmic Daydream, our hazy IPA, which, you know, that's my baby. I worked on it for almost a year. So there were 7 different iterations of beer. Wow. And each one you know, I learned something new from each one and then put them all together in the culmination that is Cosmic Daydream. And we were just like, yeah, just like, I mean, it uses galaxy hops. So the cosmic was kind of there. And Kelsey ultimately nailed down Daydream. She's like, well, what about Cosmic Dream? And then she's like, Cosmic Daydream. So, you know, it's just one of those things that came together. And then we just went to Katie and like, yeah, some kind of like astronaut just like floating out in space. And like, you know, like when you dream and you just kind of like detach from your body, mm-hmm. that kind of thing. And yeah, she came back with the multicolor astronaut, and we thought that was perfect.
I think, and what Adam's not telling you is the kind of the behind the scenes of the, he has the conversation with Katie kind of imparting what we think it should look like. And then there's, it goes out to our whole team. So we're a relatively small team, but everybody on the team has the opportunity to review it and provide feedback. And
who does that entail? Who is part of
who's the team?
Yeah.
So our tasting room manager, Kristen, is part of that team. Kelsey, who's our production manager, Adam, myself, Nathan, who is our CEO, and then Jeffrey, who is our sales and logistics coordinator at this point.
And do you ever have someone who's like, is anyone very strongly opinionated?
That would be me.
I love the honesty.
For as long as Eventide has been an exception, even before we knew its name, all of my co-founders kind of dubbed me the moral compass, but with that came protector of the brand identity.
Yeah.
And so all of these years, even as my day job has taken me away from the brewery, that has held true. So my gauge is this true to who we set out to be? Is this true to who we set out to be in our growth? And really, it took a little bit for me to recognize that in order to be a successful business, there had to be growth, in which meant I had to change my mind. And that has been my own internal challenge and some of the challenge of people that have had to work with me over the years.
Yeah.
Thank you all.
And what about, like, has community feedback ever really played a role?
So we definitely have done some beers in the past where, you know, it may have had a particular idea or name in a tasting room beer. And then when it got ready to go to the market, it changed names or changed kind of its visual concept. So Adam, being in the position that where he coordinates with Katie, could speak to that a little more.
Yeah, I mean, I think the best example is Arbor Ale, to where we had the Kolsch, which is our Kolsch style ale, which is our flagship, and then we made a number of different fruited versions. So cherry, blueberry, we did a hot pepper, and mm-hmm. then a honeysuckle.
A hot pepper, that sounds so good.
Yeah, yeah, pepper beers are interesting. You know, I don't know if it worked as well with the lighter beer, but sometimes in like heavier beers like mm-hmm. stouts with like cinnamon and chocolate, you get what they call a Mexican stout. Mm-hmm. So just a little bit of tickle at the back of the throat. So Arbor Ale, we basically had these four different versions of the Kolsch, the fruited Kolsch, and polled, you know, the neighborhood, the regulars and everything. And resoundingly, they said the Honeysuckle Kolsch.
Mm.
So now it's Arbor Ale, and it was a partnership with
Trees Atlanta.
Yeah. So.
Oh, wow. So you guys do a lot of partnerships with, like, assuming Trees Atlanta has to do with trees.
Yes. Yes, absolutely.
Assuming that.
Yeah.
So, put the roots down one, two, then. Yeah.
So each of the founders are from very rural parts of Georgia, and farming and being makers and doers has kind of been ingrained in who we are. And so in many of the partnerships that we seek out, it is geared toward that. We do like to have those that kind of tie back to who we set out to be as a company. And we do consider ourselves a big part of the Grant Park community. And so our partnership for the Summer Shade Festival, which goes for the Grant Park Conservancy.
Did that happen early this year?
Yeah. It did. That was released 2 or 3 weeks ago.
Yeah, a few weeks ago we had a pig roast, had a big party, and we busted out the giant check because we donated $3,500 to the Conservancy.
Oh, I saw that. Yeah.
Yeah. So
I screamed into that.
Yeah. So what they do is they make sure that Grant Park, you know, historic Grant Park is kept up. You know, something.
And our partnership with Trees Atlanta was a lot in conserving the canopies of Atlanta, and we sponsored several of their like planting days and cleanup days.
Oh, cool.
And we had large goals of continuing that partnership, but that is something that we
that's awesome.
And then we've moved into partnerships like Roots Down,
yeah,
because they do have a lot to do with community and not so much farming, but you know.
Well, they were a super interesting organization when I looked into them more. Yeah. And like when I saw what they were doing, I was like, this is so cool, because what it seemed to me, at least, that I picked up on was Roots Down does like the usable,
yeah,
the
turning,
urban landscapes,
turning green space into urban gardens.
Yeah, but that also like provides and doesn't need a lot of upkeep and kind of will naturally.
Yes, and coming from a farm community, I mean, you essentially your food is right there in your backyard. It's right there where you live. And so for me, the Roots Down partnership was an easy yes, because it was putting fresh food sources in communities that are lacking that.
Yeah.
And so that was an exciting partnership. And I think Adam knocked it out of the park with the sour. It's one of my favorite sours
today.
Yeah,
really good. Thank you. I've had that one.
Yeah, blackberry, blueberry, pomegranate.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And then, wait, so when I got that beer, I also got with it a sticker that had a rainbow, dinosaur, and a kid on a bike. It's like one of my favorite stickers I've ever seen in my entire life. Where did that come from?
That was from Roots Down.
That was one of theirs. Because that thing was amazing. I just love that sticker. I was like, what is even going on here? Anyways. Okay, so we kind of talked about this, and I mean, we did, but how the names come to be, what comes first, the beer, the labels. Is there any particular beer, maybe that's available now, or maybe not, that was like an interesting process, or like getting it to where, or bringing it to the public was a different or particularly fun or an experience that stands out?
Do you have an example?
I can take this one.
All right.
So in thinking about we refer to them as our core styles. So that would be the Eventide Pale Ale, Eventide Kolsch, as well as the A. And if you note, we call it the Eventide Pale Ale and Eventide Kolsch. And that was because we couldn't agree on a name. And we thought, as a new brand, let's just put our name on it and go from there. And in those early days of establishing what your brand is going to look like, what is going to cause someone to pull it from a shelf with multiple options, there were a lot of different iterations that went through, and we landed on some hand-drawn images, and we were working with 3L Media at the time, and they developed our core style labels and kind of set the tone for what our brand was going to look like at the time. And so for me, that was the biggest challenge to date, was landing on a color scheme and an image, and how did we stand true to who we were, meet the great doesn't have to be complicated idea, as well as put something out there that would attract the consumer to drink it not knowing what was inside, because we were a new brand.
I love that. Yeah. So, and I don't know kind of who this leans more towards, but when it does come to the creativity or the maybe the ingredients in a specific beer or something, where is this, like, kind of your inspiration coming from? Or is it coming from somewhere? Is it just your brain does it for you? Or do you see something on the side of the road? Like, where does it even, like, where does this come from?
So, yeah, that's definitely my shop. it's really, I mean, if you look at my Instagram feed, it's like 93% beer. So I'm looking at market trends, things like that, new styles that are coming out. For example, Bikini Snow, our cold IPA, which is a very recent style that's still kind of contested. Is it a real style? Is it not? Is it a gimmick? You know, and I was like, I don't care. I just want to brew it, you know, and see what it tastes like. It flew out of here. People are like, what is that? Oh my God, it's so good. So, you know,
wait, and what is it?
So it's a cold IPA.
What does that mean?
And it in my mind, after doing the research of the few examples that are out there, at least, you know, several months ago, is that it's fermented with ale yeast at the lowest possible temperature. So it's cold fermented. That's where the cold comes from.
Okay.
It's dry hopped during active fermentation, and it uses adjunct grains, in our case, corn and rice, for a clean finish, but a... but crisp and with a little bit of sweetness. So I kind of see it as not necessarily the antithesis of a New England IPA,
mm-hmm.
but where, you know, the New England is just super hazy and dank and juicy. This is like light and clean and crisp and, you know, it's just
Well, I need sharp. To try that immediately.
Unfortunately, they drank this all out.
Yeah, I don't typically gravitate toward IPAs. A lot of the different hop profiles just hit me in the back of the throat in the way that I'm not interested in a second swallow. However, this particular style was one that I could hurt myself on. So it was very, very good. I was one of those people that was taking it off the shelves pretty regularly.
Yeah, and several people did hurt themselves on it. But yeah, but and you know, that's one that
we won't name any names.
Yeah. And you know, that's one that I'm definitely interested in brewing again, because so Haley was talking about to market or tap room release. Are we going to package? Is it draft only? Is it draft and cans? So the base of that is our one-offs. So we'll brew 5 barrels of just whatever, and that's kind of the. Like where I get to exercise my inspiration, where I'm like, I want to work with this type of fruit or this type of spice, you know, cinnamon, cocoa nibs, different things like that.
Have you done anything fun lately?
I mean, Bikini Snow is definitely a fun one. We've got a few beers in barrels right now, which we've been hanging on to and doing sensory on those. One is our anniversary ale from last year, which was a Belgian triple. So we are going to have that for our anniversary next year, 2022. Well, I guess it was our anniversary beer for this year. Yeah. So, it's so hard to believe that
we're in 2021.
Yeah, that we're in 2021.
Oh my, wait, literally September. Last night I was like, wait, it's September.
Yeah.
We're nearing 2022.
Yes. Yeah. Yes. But did 2020 even happen?
I get that 2020 happened. When did 2021 happen?
Yeah.
That's where I got lost.
Yeah. Well, yeah, I was thinking that our last anniversary was in 2020, but no, we did have a 2021 anniversary.
It's like we haven't made enough progress for 2 years to have passed.
Yeah.
Like, how are we still?
It's a huge ripple in time, but yeah, we have that in Old Fourth bourbon barrels, and then another very popular one, beer that we released, a Doppelbock. So a German strong lager that we have in the same barrels that's just resting in the warehouse, you know, slowly soaking up those spirit characters and the, you know, mellowing out from the wood. But you know, yeah, I mean, I am constantly, you know, researching different aspects of beer and, you know, new techniques and, you know, new hops are coming out all the time, new yeasts. Interestingly enough, like, people don't necessarily understand. They're like, yeah, you just throw some grain and some water and yeast. It's just yeast. You use yeast. And I'm like, no, like, first of all, there are ale yeast, there are lager yeast, and then within that, there are hundreds of different types, right?
And not to mention, if you purchase yeast from one supplier, it can be the same yeast purchased from a different supplier, and the flavor profile of the beer is going to change.
Fascinating.
Yeah, so...
Well, we need some consistency.
Mayonnaise. Is it Kraft's mayonnaise? It's all mayonnaise, but it's two different suppliers. It's kind of the same idea.
Yeah, that's a good analogy, yeah. Because, I mean, they propagate them themselves. They are strains, you know, that split at one point from a parent, right?
Yeah.
There was one common ancestor from those two strains. And then, you know, one strain develops a genetic complement, you know, on one side that has a taste profile A, and then the other one diverges and has taste profile B, some of which are...
And they just get different and more different and more different and more different, as the years go by.
Yeah. So if you think about our Kolsch versus our Citrus Grove, they're both ales, right? Kolsch uses... we use K97, which is a dry yeast. So it's almost like a lager yeast. They say it's kind of a hybrid where you get very low flavors, maybe a little bit of apple, maybe some pear notes to it. But then the Hefeweizen... When you drink that, you should pick up those bold notes of banana and clove, and that actually comes from the yeast. So, you know, isoamyl acetate is the ester that gives you banana flavor, and then 4-vinyl guaiacol is what gives you the clove flavor. So it's the yeast that actually creates those flavors. So if you were to use a Hef yeast in the Kolsch, I mean, it wouldn't be Kolsch.
Interesting.
I'm also going to bring this back around to the 2021 anniversary ale that Adam mentioned. We have barrel aging right now, and talk about on January 8th, we will be celebrating our 8th anniversary with an all-out 80s themed party. Stay tuned for some of these barrel aged products going to market.
Yeah, and we're calling it, like, you know how the Eventide E?
Mm-hmm.
8 E's. Oh.
Oh, yeah. I love that.
But on the 8th, our 8th anniversary, all out 80s. We're super stoked.
You know, parachute pants, you know, those shade glasses.
Uh-huh.
Just flat bracelets.
You're going to need a windsuit.
Yes.
A what suit?
A windsuit. Oh. Look at
I wasn't
up.
Here in the 80s. I don't know.
Yeah, basically, you know, like a windbreaker, but mm-hmm. for your entire body.
Yes.
Wait,
it's like a swishy tracksuit.
A swishy tracksuit.
Yeah. Wait, what? I'm thinking what
she
I
doesn't
what
know what
I always
is.
I know what a tracksuit is. What I always love is like 80s era snowsuits.
Yes.
So yeah. I was trying to think of how you could incorporate the snow. What was it called? The
Bikini Snow?
Bikini Snow somehow with that. I don't know. I love that.
Yeah, it's going to be a good time.
Yeah. So, okay. So is there, and you could have the same answer, different answer. What's your favorite beer you've done? What's your favorite label you've done? And is that the same beer? Is it not? What's your favorite that you've done?
I mean, for me, I already touched on it that, you know, the actual recipe and the beer itself, Cosmic Daydream, is my baby. And then just how easy it was working with Katie to get that design. And I just think it came together so well. And it was probably one of our smoothest market releases just because... we had solid deadlines for like everything. We had to get to the design.
We definitely have to give some credit to Firebee, who's our PR team. They really set us up well with a timeline and schedule of getting that to market.
Yeah, and having interviews and influencers and making sure that it was a well-publicized launch.
Yeah.
So, you know, just everything about that whole thing, you know, it's like, you know, what's the best time in your life? Oh, well, that summer of, you know, 1998 or something like that was my favorite, you know. So it was that whole progression of Cosmic Daydream, how it all came together.
Yeah, I love that.
When I initially wrote down my answer, my favorite beer was my favorite can design, but since we've been talking, I'm gonna have to adjust my favorite beer that we've ever made. It was Snowpocalypse, and Ooh. It was the year of the snowstorm that left people stranded on the interstates in Atlanta.
How much snow did you get? Like a half an inch?
Oh, no. I feel like it was more than that. Do you remember this year, Adam? I don't even know. Was it 2017, 2018?
It was because there was so much ice.
Yes.
That was the one that people...
Snowmageddon, snowcocalypse, like all of Atlanta would be able to reference this time frame. And the year is being lost on me, but I do feel like it was 2017, maybe 2018.
Okay.
But
I know I heard about the ice storms. All right, I'm from up north. And
gotcha.
You would laugh. Like, I'm just used to, like, I mean, you know, 4 feet of snow, you're going to school, like, get those snow tires, have your all-wheel drive,
Did not measure in the feet, but it was a situation where
you're not prepared, you don't have the salt, you don't have to deal with it.
The infrastructure was absolutely not there. We have three salt trucks here, and I lived in Chicago for 7 years, so I've seen, like, literal battalions, like, clearing the highway while it's snowing. It's amazing to see, mm-hmm. because you'll have one that's in the front shoveling the snow to the left, which mm-hmm. is slightly behind, which shovels to the left until it's all shoveled off the, you know, off the highway. Mm-hmm. But yeah, with our three salt trucks and 2 tons of salt, we were horribly prepared, and it came down so fast and it all froze. So that people just literally abandoned their cars.
Yeah. So our Belgian strong ale that was being brewed at that time when we got ready to name it, because it was a beast of a beer.
It was a beast of a storm.
And brewed during that time, we lovingly named it Snowpocalypse.
I love that.
And I love Belgian Strongs. Really anything from the doubles, the triples, the quads, anything in that vein. Those are my beers. And so to date, that is probably my favorite beer that we have brewed. And Adam has some very, very close Belgian seconds in that. Just neck and neck with Snowpocalypse, if you will. And then my favorite label that we designed was the Redheaded Haley label. As my namesake, I was very particular in what the image looked like, simply because it...
I mean, if I had my name on a beer, I'd be like, no, yeah, I'm going to approve of this.
To me, it was not only a representation of me, but it was a representation of our brand. And so we worked for a lot of long, hard hours with 3OWL Media to land on the Redheaded Haley design, which has some hand-drawn imagery to it, which is kind of in the same vein as our core styles, as it was one of the first seasonal cans that we put in the market.
Got it.
How about we make a Jenna Blonde Ale?
Oh, it was so funny. I saw some... What was it? It was something that was like a... Something blonde. It was Pontoon's... It looks like the Rugrats. I don't know.
Oh, yeah.
What's it called?
Isn't that called New Wave?
Yeah.
I
think so. It's like pink.
I think it's
Angelica,
like...
Angelica from Rugrats?
Oh, that's funny. I can see that. But that was like one of the first selfies of me with a beer I ever put on the internet. And it was a... What did they call it? It was a... Something blonde ale. Radical blonde ale.
Yeah, new wave radical blonde ale.
And I remember being like, this feels appropriate. Like, I don't know, I could be a radical blonde ale. I don't know. Like,
yeah.
I feel like I carried this just little bit of weight on my shoulder for having a beer named after me and a company that I feel like
I would have a full ass chip on my shoulder
that I felt like I helped bring to inception. So we just recently moved it from a wrapped can to a bright can, and Adam can tell you that when I found out that we were doing this, the very first thing that I said was, nothing can change.
Yeah.
wait, from a wrapped can, so the label is wrapped on it. You mean
where you have like a shrink wrap label where it covers like every surface of the can versus just a sticky label that covers the cylindrical part of the can.
So what did you change it to?
Just the format.
So we moved from a wrapped, shrink-wrapped can that covered everything to a bright can that is just a smaller label. So we have a labeler now.
Yeah, we have an inline labeler that comes off of our canning line. So, you know, we did the math and, you know, how many bright cans we buy versus wrapped cans, what makes the most money, you know, and we're literally talking about like a penny here, a penny there in
cans.
It
makes a big difference,
but
though. Yeah, you do that times
100,000 and you've got some money there. So, you know, we were like, okay, we'll invest in the labeler and the labels themselves. So
this also gives us,
I thought that I had heard the shrink wraps were cheaper.
Okay.
It was like you needed less of a, the shrink wraps compared to the regular labels.
So you have a printed can, which you would get from a large canning company like Ball, and you buy those in such large quantities that you get a pretty good discount on it, but you have to have storage space for it. And then you have
and
the shrink wrapped. You have the shrink wrap cans, which give you a little more versatility over the volume. And then you have the bright can labeling, which, because we have a labeler and a canner in back of house, we literally could can a case of one beer and change it over and do another case of the beer. So for us, it was more about the versatility of being able to can tasting room products, which is kind of where we've talked about, like, this goes to market, this is released only in the tasting room. So the canning and these bright can labels allow us to essentially can,
like, is the blueberry anything. Yum yum, like, is that available in stores or just?
Nope, it's in cans, but only here.
Wow, that's why
we definitely, you know, push to have people come in here, because that's kind of a pivot that we made in, you know, COVID, is canning our short runs. So, you know, we might have a popular beer that's on tap, and people say, "Oh, I really like this, and I want to take it home." And frankly, I think growlers are on the way out. Just because you have a growler, you open it, the clock's ticking. If you leave it in your fridge, it's going to be flat. Who's going to drink 64 ounces of a beer in one sitting? you know, and all of that. So, you know, it's really in crowlers, one, I think, are huge, which are the 32-ounce cans. And then the ability for us to can our short runs. So it's like, oh, you know, you like blueberry yum yum, we'll grab a six-pack to go home. You know,
and by short runs, we have a smaller, we call it our tiny tank in the back. It is 5 barrels.
We brew 5 barrels into it, but it's 7 barrel. Yeah.
So this allows us to do small batch brewing. So when he's talking about short runs, not only is that a shorter time that it's in the market, but it can actually be a smaller amount of beer that we would typically only sell through draft. But this gives us the opportunity to put it in cans.
Yeah, that's awesome. It's crazy how I feel like COVID really did that for a lot of breweries, is you got to can it. It needs to get into a can.
Yeah, it definitely put the screws to people. And, you know, we're still kind of having issues getting bright cans. We were dealing with an aluminum shortage that's still kind of going on.
Oh, really?
Yeah. So you may notice and you'll be like, oh, that's tacky, but we're doing what we can to survive. Is a lot of breweries are actually taking printed cans that they have and labeling over them, because we have cans for, say, the A, but, you know, we need to package all these other beers. So, you know, I've seen several other breweries doing it. You know, we do it if we need to, but
I definitely pulled the label off of something and there was another label.
You're like, this is not what did I actually drink?
It's funny because though that was what I assumed had happened.
Yeah,
because of COVID and the can shortages and all that.
Yeah, I mean, it really made us pivot and to look at, you know, what was actually making us money. You know, is it market? Is it tap room? You know, like, is it packaged tap room? Is it draft tap room? Like, you know.
So how is it now compared to pre-COVID?
How is the process or how is the supply?
I don't know. How are we back, or is it a new world, or is it more COVID world? Like,
I think we have adapted processes and all of the things that we have adapted to, those things were in place in 2019 and 2020. We just have changed our business model to better be able to survive in a stay at home work at home, social distancing kind of environment. And we really, our CEO, Nathan, had really set us on this trajectory probably 3 to 3.5 years ago, where we started brewing smaller batches and testing them out in the tasting room. And so a beer would be brewed, a name would be decided, whether it was kind of a crowdsourced name. And by that, I mean staff, friends, family. We would pick a name, and then we would work with a chalkboard artist to kind of bring that name to life. And our chalkboard art goes a long way to kind of lending to kind of what the can design is going to look like as well. Yeah. And so Andre,
is that a title of a human chalkboard artist? Because yes. I do have to often wonder, like, who is doing this?
So our current artist, his name is Andre Williams. And when Adam and Kelsey develop a beer and it goes through production, and then they start kind of talking about, what are we going to name this? What do we want the image to look like? The name and the idea then goes to Andre, and he generates an image. And not all of these images that are up there are his right now, because as seasonal styles come back into rotation, we've had a couple of different chalkboard artists over the years, but they really are kind of instrumental in the initial phases of bringing that story to an image. And then that particular image is then translated to Katie, who does all of our label designs, to help translate it to a label. And it may be that, you know, blueberry yum yum up here, the label, the chalkboard art looks very different from the label. And sometimes they match perfectly, but this is kind of our test space. It's our test space for beer. What's well received in the market? What imagery is well received? Do people feel comfortable saying Kolsch or Damerung or Kattegat? Or are these names?
What's the Damerung one? I've had that.
So the Damerung is a Pilsner.
Is that still there?
It's not up there right now, but we had...
Because that one was hard to say. I will say, I struggled for a hot second ordering that.
You know, these are things when they come through the tasting room and we've named a beer and we've kind of developed an image. You know, we look at, does this sell because people are drawn to its image? Does this sell more over one because people feel comfortable saying Kattegat or the A? You know, do people order the redheaded Haley because they are very comfortable saying it, when in truth they'd rather have X beer? So this is kind of our lab for
I love
research
that. That's
here.
So interesting how you can do that. Yeah. And to have the... It's so convenient, kind of, to have it, like, the taste or the testing built in. I always love learning about or hearing anything about, like, the McDonald's testing site or whatever it is, how, like, they have, like, a full-on, like, restaurant, and I'd love to go there. Anyways.
Well, when we launched our tasting room in the Grant Park area, we crowdsourced it, and what that allowed us to do was to gain lifetime followers. And so some of those lifetime members, they come in, and whenever they come in, they drink for free. And what that means is they walk down here almost every day that we're open, and they know our staff, they know our brand, and you get the honest feedback on the beer from people that have genuinely grown with the brand. And so there's a lot of value in the feedback that comes through the tasting room.
Yeah. And so what's the difference with the Super Smash Bros, as you mentioned, it alternates. What is that umbrella term / branding? And then what are the different, how does it change?
Yeah, so it is a series that I came up with. So SMASH in the beer world stands for single malt and single hop. So SM and single hop. So that just means that, so it's a constriction on recipe development. So it's saying you can only use one grain and one hop, and that's it. You can use any type of yeast you want, you know, any type of water chemistry or whatever. So what I wanted to do is to showcase that how many different types of beers can be made with a single hop and a single malt. So a lot of people think, oh, well, it's just going to be pale ale or an IPA. No, I mean, like the first one we did, I did, I think it was Golden Promise Mosaic Pale Ale. Second one, that was Mario.
It was a Saison, wasn't it?
Yeah. So the first one was Mario. Second one was Yoshi, which was a Saison. And this third one is Waluigi, and it's an English Best Bitter. And then for Halloween, we're going to do King Boo. So the little, you know.
Yes! Oh my God, ghosty guy. I love that. And I love that.
Yeah, and I'm coming up with that recipe now. But it's like writing, you know, it's akin to, say, poetry, where anyone can write like free form poetry, which is like, you know, in developing a beer, you can use any ingredient and throw as much in as you want. But say writing a sonnet, you know, it has to be A, B.
You have to be good within these parameters.
Within the parameters of that. So, you know, it's kind of a challenge to myself, I think, to say, okay, I can only use these two things. And, you know, frankly, I tried to come up with a couple different recipes and I was like, I can't do it because I have to have a crystal malt in addition to the base malt or it's not going to be true to style. Mm-hmm. So you also asked about inspiration. Mm-hmm. And I mean, one thing that I do is like when I start developing a recipe, I go on my phone and I pull up the BJCP style guidelines. So they literally have every beer and it tells you, you know, how many IBU, how much alcohol it should have, what it should taste like, what ingredients it uses. So when someone says true to style, that's what they mean. Mm-hmm. So Beer Judge Certification Program or BJCP.
Yeah, absolutely. So obviously brewing is an art form and it's an art and, you know, what you're making is art. But how do you think the, you know, kind of the creative and the visual aspects of craft beer plays into it? Because, I mean, I think maybe even increasingly year after year, it's becoming the online community and sharing what we're drinking. There really is a huge visual component. And so I was wondering, like, have you seen it change over time or how do you view it? You know, do you think the actual visual, physical art, how much do you think that matters or for the experience?
I mean, right now, we have the most breweries in the country that we've ever had at any one point, even pre-prohibition. So it's,
which is wild.
Yeah, like, it's over 8,000 now. So I think what's happening with beer now is what happened with wine in the 90s to the 2000s, which was the label. All the label. They did, you know, different studies on it where, you know, if you have your wine at this level, you know, at the third shelf from the bottom, and it has an animal on the label, you know, 59% of women will buy that wine.
I will buy Yellowtail. Yes, I will.
Yeah.
Oh, I totally remember in the early days when I was talking earlier about how those first labels were challenging. Our co-founder that was in the marketing vein was like, it needs to have an animal on it. And we're like, we don't want animals. That doesn't, I mean, we all have dogs, but that doesn't really align with
what we're doing,
what we envision as a brand. And so there is, I think, a component of acknowledging that some studies have been done and you should maybe consider working within those constraints, but also,
if it's not genuine though, no one's going to buy it. No, it's,
that is very true. But also, and this era and at this point in our lives, I mean, I think work is work, but if work can be fun, if work can be beautiful and enjoyable, do that. To hell with what the statistics say in some areas. But it, for me, in looking at designs, I still go back to where we started as a brand. Like, how does this make me feel as a consumer? how does this make me feel as an owner? How mm-hmm. does this make me feel as a founder? How does this make me feel as a friend to the man that brewed, or the woman, because Kelsey also brews in back, but how does it make me feel as a friend to those people? Because I want that to be translated into the market, and I would never want to put anything out there that misrepresents any of us as an individual, but certainly not as us as a company. And so putting an animal on there, we're all dog lovers, but is that true to
no one wants
our
my
brand?
Yorkie right now.
Yeah. And I mean, what
Schnauzer.
Like what I'm was trying to go for is more of like the market as a whole is that idea of there's so many beers right now, because I mean back in, you know, when Napa exploded, there were so many wines coming out, and people realizing that they were actually as good as Old World or European wines.
Oh, absolutely.
That they just needed that extra half a percent to get that. And so I'm, you know, not looking at Eventide, because of course we're not going to do something disingenuous, but the market as a whole I feel is kind of going that way as far as art and naming as well, is because if you have like, or controversy.
Oh yes.
I mean, like we've dipped our toes in a little bit of, you know, IP, in not necessarily infringement, but just playing with the idea. Like we have an American lager called Coors Weiser, genuine draft. So it's one of those things that the name, I just like started calling it that, tongue in cheek. And it just kind of stuck.
Yeah. So on that note, Even Claw.
Yeah.
Do people order it? Like, I can't imagine going to a brewery and being like, yeah, I'd love a hard seltzer right now. I get that that's what the world is drinking at the moment. Like, do people order it? Like, do people drink it?
All the time.
Really?
Really and truly, our...
What about your regulars? What about those people you said come all the time, like whenever you're open?
Absolutely. I mean, not everybody reaches for a beer every day. I mean, I drink the wine. I drink the Dark and Stormies. I mean, I think in general, your alcohol consumers, you know, enjoy different varieties of alcohol at different times. And for us, it just really allows us to offer some variety. So you've got the husband that comes who's all about the IPA, but the wife would rather be at home with a glass of wine or at a nice restaurant with a glass of wine. It gives us an offering that is not beer, but also for our gluten-free guest, that gives us an option in
and
the alcohol
locale
thing.
Too.
Yeah.
Because, I mean, it's super low carb.
I have no idea what calories are in any beer, and I
don't think
I want to know.
Don't
like,
look. Do not
like,
look.
Like, there's no label. It doesn't say on the label, and therefore I don't need to know.
Exactly.
I'm going to assume they're all the same.
Exactly.
Yeah. You would be wildly surprised. And, I mean, we do have a few regulars that strictly drink Even Claw just because they're like, you know, it is a vehicle for alcohol to go into my body. Like,
and that's why I drank Even...
If I drank this...
Wait, what's it called?
Even
White Claw.
White Claw, yeah.
But, sorry.
If I drank the same amount of beer to get that amount of alcohol, I would literally be drinking like 1,800 calories.
Oh my God.
So, and it really is that much. Because, you know, we're a brewery, so we can't have, I mean, we could get the license for it, but it would require extra, you know, licensure for wine or liquor. We can't even do a cider, because that falls under another license as well, because we have that all the time. What do you have besides beer, or do you have a cider? So what we go for is, well, we have the Even Claw, and then we have a couple sours, because we see that the sours are kind of like the interface between the kind of the wine people, and typically women do like the sours more.
That's but all my girlfriends,
your girlfriends,
they're all like, I give them all like a sour.
Yeah.
And they're all like, oh my God, it's the best thing I've ever had. I'm like...
Yeah. And you're like, it's actually beer. You're like, really?
It's how it feels.
Yeah. So, yeah, I mean, and that's, you know, like Haley said, just to have that variety for people who don't want beer. I mean, it's frustrating for me when you see people come up, when you see people enter a brewery, come up to the bar at a brewery and ask what they have that's not beer.
You're like...
Yeah.
You came here.
I know.
It's in the name.
Yeah. And then the Coors Weiser, why we did that was, we have a great space here, so we do a lot of events and stuff. So we have people coming from all over the state, even out of state. And, you know, you've got those good old boys from down south who are just like, you know, what do you got beer that tastes like beer? You know, and I was like, sure do.
Yes, I do.
Sure do. It's right here, Coors Weiser Genuine Draft. And they have a laugh at it, and they say, wow, this tastes really good.
Adam's
this
actually tastes just talking like my Budweiser. Adam's actually talking about my dad. truth be told,
well, he likes Kattegat.
Is his favorite
Bud
beer.
Bud Light and Kattegat.
Yeah, Bud Light and Kattegat. That's my dad.
He's the good old boy. I'm still really struggling to get my parents to like anything. And I'm like, every time I'm like, this is going to be like, I have five things. You're going to like one of them. I know it. Miss everyone. I'm like.
My mom drinks Blue Moon or any Belgian beer or any dark beer that we have, which for the length of time that I've been in the craft beer industry, if you told me that you drank Blue Moon, I would offer you a Citrus Grove.
Yes.
Because stylistically, that's where my mind goes. So don't give up on your parents yet.
I
think you need to find out what it is they do drink and just run the whole gamut, because as I've learned with craft beer, it's a big, big world out there with lots of different styles.
I think they just get so confused when like they're like, well, because I sent them to a brewery without me. I was like, just go to Stella. I was like, see what you think. Send me pictures. See what happens. And they didn't know what to order. They didn't know what the styles were. So they just ordered a couple things. And they hated everyone. And I'm like, well, that's on you for doing that. But what I really thought on the sour note that you had said, I found that like a lot of wine drinkers do love a sour. But in my experience, at least with my friends, if you put like a smoothie, like a heavily fruited like smoothie thing, they can't get past the thickness or the perceived thickness, and it's too weird and they just can't. And I'm like, it tastes like a smoothie. Literally, you like smoothies. And I think it's a mental block or something.
Mouthfeel does bring a lot to the table in a beer.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think one of the things that sets our sours apart slightly is we don't do the smoothie thing.
That's
like,
what I
we
love
do not do smoothie sours. It's balanced. You know, we're not going to put fruit puree in a can with a little trickle of beer, you know, power to the breweries that are doing it. You know, I would be terrified to can something like that, you know, seeing exploding cans out there.
Oh, yeah. Definitely got to consider pasteurization.
Pasteurization, and then all the issues like that's been coming out of 450 North, where there was a lawsuit because they were saying the beer was like 8% alcohol and it was like 1.2. Because it's like, oh, when you dilute your product with fruit puree, it actually lowers the ABV. So, you know, just all of that, you know, I want it to be balanced. I want you to get the taste of the fruits, like the, you know, the Liberry Sour. You get the blackberry, the blueberry, the pomegranate.
You really do.
Yeah, but it's not like I'm drinking a smoothie. So, you know, that's what I go for personally. I mean, the most fruit-forward thing I've brewed is probably the Blueberry Yum Yum. And even then, you get the tartness from the goza. You get a little bit of that brininess from the sea salt and a little lemon kick from the coriander. So in my mind, it's all about balance, you know?
Yeah, absolutely. So is there anything that, and we kind of touched on this, but either that you're working on now that you're really excited about, or that you've wanted to brew, or that you wanted to do, or is there anything kind of...
We did touch on the barrel, the barrel projects that we have going on, the barrel aged Belgian triple, and then the barrel aged Doppelbock. Those are going to be pretty awesome. I actually tried one of the Doppelbock barrels last week, and it's developing very nicely. So we like to check with them every month and take some samples.
It's definitely a fun party.
Yeah. Because, I mean, you're sampling several barrels, and they're all, like, 10-plus ABV. So, but it's work. Yeah.
Gotta do it.
Gotta do it.
Oh, no.
So, yeah. And we usually do it on a Friday. You know, Friday afternoon. But, you know, the big things we got going on, Oktoberfest, that's coming up. October 2nd, that's going to be a great time. We've got several different beers, Steinholding contests, costume contests, different food.
We saw October 2nd?
Yep. Yes. October 2nd.
I'm moving out of Georgia late October, so but then I'll still be here.
Yeah.
Put it on your calendar.
Yes. Yes. And then, you know, as Haley mentioned, on January 8th
is our 8th anniversary. I was thinking, I was like, I need to come back.
80s, yeah. Yeah. You're going up
north. New York.
New York. Nice.
Yeah.
And, you know, what I always say, I mean, yes, we have our beer out in the market, but the fun is really here at the tap room, you know, where we do have our, you know, I mentioned the short runs before, where you can grab cans to go home or sample the new beers.
And
or
is
the
that
experimental
what you're
beers.
Able to have more fun with as the brewer? You can, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, you know, Kelsey and I can brew Kolsch with our eyes closed right now, just because, I mean, it is our flagship and we brew a lot of it. Mm-hmm. So
is that like boring, like?
I mean, it's not boring because, like, I mean, every day is different. You don't know if a pump is going to fail one day or you're going to have a new, you know, complication or, you know, like the power may go out or it may rain and, you know, like your car floods or like something like that. But yeah, I mean, it's like, you know, I always say, like, you know, you don't pay me to brew. You pay me to troubleshoot. Is because that's, I mean, I could give you a brew sheet and say, do these things.
That would do no one any good giving that to me.
Yeah.
That would do no one any good.
But it's procedural. You could say, put this in here and stir it. You know, it's like, it's a recipe. It's a baking recipe, you know, and some people are better than others, but ultimately it's a list of directions. But when something goes wrong, how do you fix it? You know, and that's the thing that takes experience and that you can't teach.
Yeah.
Only experience can teach you that.
And I think, I mean, with my kind of in and out after having a day job, for me, it's the people, it's the staff, it is the supporters in the community. We have a hardcore redheaded Haley fan who over the past couple of years, like he and I have just kind of been lamenting about, it's not in cans because we didn't can it last year. It's not in market. And this year, the very first can that I got my hand on, because I'm behind the scenes doing our marketing stuff, shot him a message and was like, it's coming back. And just that exchange and that excitement. So are there boring parts? Yes. Are there boring parts to your job? Yes. But are there parts where you can delight a customer and take that experience to the next level? And for me, those are definitely the moments that really shine through. And I can't do any of that delighting for the customer without Adam and Kelsey, you know, doing their magic in the back of the house. So I rely very heavily on them to be able to do that. And even Kristen and what she does in this space. So it requires a team effort all before I ever get to have any of the glory of this event went well, here's a pretty picture, or this beer tastes great, by the way, it's coming back. So I rely heavily on these guys.
I love that, And I mean, it is definitely, I think, one of the best parts or the best part about the industry is the people. Because,
agreed.
And that's one of the reasons I was drawn to it, because it was like, I mean, in the industry I was in like private equity finance, and I was like, the people involved in these two industries, like, who do I want to hang out with more? Like,
Oh, that's a tough one.
Like, so hard. Yeah, that was an easy decision.
Ones you can drink with versus ones you want that make you want to drink. I get that.
Yeah, literally. Mm. Is there, one of the last questions here is there something that you've, that you wish people knew when they come across your beer, when they come across your tap room, or they drive by, like, what do you want people to know about Eventide and about you and your beer?
I don't think we can tell them.
What's the secret?
prior to this whole conversation, Adam and I kind of talked offline about constructive feedback versus hurtful feedback. Mm. So if you've been listening, you know that there are five of us that work here. So we're a very, and I say five of us rather loosely because we do have a bar staff that I'm not including in that. So when you say, I don't like stouts, so this beer rates a one in my book, or I don't like stouts, I'm going to pour it out. For us, that's hurtful. Because you liking stouts or not is not a reflection of the style. And so for the five of us who this is our baby, and those five people are our family, those kind of comments can sometimes be hurtful. So for me, I want craft beer consumers that seek out Eventide to know that we are a tiny family. And while we love your feedback and your support and your constructive criticism and bringing your friends here and getting to be a part of your story as well, sometimes what you deem as just regular old social media feedback is actually quite hurtful.
Yeah.
And I mean, we do know there are trolls out there that, I mean, that's their purpose, like literally is to just make fun of the Georgia beer scene or something like that.
We'll take that tongue in cheek too.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, they're just having fun. But you know, I would like people to know their beer 101 before coming in here, or at least be willing to learn it. I'm not like everyone should be, you know, a master Cicerone when they come in here, but you know, I get questions all the time. Every Wednesday we have an Ask Adam, which is, you know, where I'll answer questions about beer, and then we have certain beers on tap that are $4 pints, and then we have an $8 six pack that I pick out. So just being able to understand that, and I'll talk about beer all day long, you know. So you know, and that, like Haley said, you can be critical but be constructive, you know, like why don't you like it? Well, it has this flavor, it's, you know, kind of like banana-y. And I was like, well, yeah,
you do, know, you like bananas,
that's yeah. And that, like, I'm just thinking Citrus Grove, and I was like, yeah, you know, that's Citrus Grove, that's part of the yeast character, and that's how the beer should taste. That's not an off flavor. So, you know, identifying, you know, certain on or off flavors and things like that. Just like Haley said, like, you know, it is our baby. Like, it took you 5 seconds to take a sip and form an opinion of my beer, but it took me 8 weeks to make it, and I made sure.
And I did a dang good job, too.
Yeah, and it's not like we're going to release a beer that's bad. I mean, luckily, you know, knock on wood, we've only had to dump one beer under my watch, which was due to the yeast. We had a yeast mutation thing going on, but yeah, we dumped that batch because I knew it was not going to turn out. And so, you know, I make sure that it's quality, that it's true to style. Again, like, I'm brewing the beer to the BJCP style guidelines. If you don't like it, you know, then, you know, try another one, you know. And that's why we also, I know some breweries that they literally, like, you have to order a beer. You can't taste it. Like, I have seen that happen at breweries.
Oh, really?
And we, I mean, you know, you go up to our beer tenders and they're like, you know, and I hear this all the time. Yeah, can I try that Roots Down Sour? And they say, by try, do you mean would you like a taste or would you like a full pint? And they're like, no, I'll go ahead and get a full pint, or, ooh, I can try it. And it's like, yeah, they take a sip of that, and some people are like, it's not for me. You know, that's fine. That's absolutely fine. All people have different tastes. You know, some people hate pizza. Can you imagine that?
There are psychopaths out there.
Yeah.
There are psychopaths.
So, yeah. So you know, please come in, try the full range of beers we have. I guarantee if you like beer, there will be something here for you.
Absolutely.
Yeah, and I think just to kind of, to summarize all of that and bring it back home, like, we are very open to the not beer drinkers. As a former not beer drinker. I totally get, you know, not having a style that is your go-to style, or feeling comfortable pronouncing some of the beers that we put up there. We are a very, very approachable team. We have a very, very approachable brand. We have solid quality, good beers. And as Adam said, if you're a beer drinker, you will absolutely find something. And if you're not a beer drinker, we would love to share our products with you, and help change that perspective a little bit. So,
absolutely. I love that. Awesome. Well, thank you guys so much. I really appreciate it. Is there anything else that you guys want to mention, or can you kind of say like where you are online, where people can see you if they're not in the immediate area?
So we are in about 150 different accounts across Georgia. So many of your Total Wine locations, Tower, a lot of your Greens, a lot of your smaller package stores. We do have a couple of our core styles located through Kroger and Publix in your area. But if you're looking for a particular product of ours and you're not able to find it, you can reach out through any of our social media outlets or give us a call here in the tasting room. So we get a list routinely that tells where our product is, and we are happy to help you figure out where it is. And if your local water and hole doesn't have it, we're even happy to place a call to see if we can help get it pour in there.
Love that.
Yeah. And then again, the Oktoberfest coming up October 2nd. That'll be a blast. And the anniversary party in January, January 8th, 80s 8th anniversary.
That'll be so awesome.
Yeah. Those are the big things coming up. I really like our events. They're super fun.
Yeah. I've been to only one, I think, maybe two. And I just keep wanting to come back. But it's my friends, it's hard to convince them to do beer things. It's very annoying.
yeah.
I need to work on my friends. This is what I need to do. but anyways, thank you guys again so much. I really, really appreciate it. And yeah, so I guess we'll wrap up here.
Absolutely. Thanks for having us.
Yep. Thanks a bunch.
Okay. Well, I hope you enjoyed that as much as I enjoyed doing that, and having that conversation and drinking their beer. And I really just love chatting and hearing how they really got to where they are and, you know, what's behind their beer and their artwork. Because honestly, like, they have some fantastic artwork, and I really love how their labels and art really does, like, they're all different, but they really do match well with the beer, and I don't know, it's just all cohesive. And I also just love that so many of their cans and their labels are like that matte finish, and ooh, it really just adds a whole other, like, dimension of it. Like, the matte finish is truly, truly something I love. maybe let me know if you love that too, but anyways, I would love to hear from you. So let me know if you have any thoughts or any comments or any questions or anything. So be sure to reach out at beercanlover on Instagram, or at pod@beercanlover.com. Or how else can you do that? Oh, and I have no one's done it yet, and I really want someone to, so that I can bring them in here. If you leave a voice memo at the link in my bio on Instagram, you can leave a voice recording question so that we can get you into the podcast and hear it that way. But yeah, so hope you enjoyed today's episode. And be sure to give a rate, review, follow, all the good things wherever you are listening to this podcast. And that's all I got for you this week. So I will see you next week. I hope you have a fantastic, fantastic rest of your Wednesday or whenever you are listening to this. And I will see you next week. Cheers.